Here's your tech news briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. Big tech companies like Apple and Google parent Alphabet would be hit with a new so-called web tax under a plan being ironed out by more than 100 nations. A Wall Street Journal tax reporter will be along in a moment to explain how that might impact consumers. First, let's check some headlines. You may not be ready to upgrade to a new smartphone with a 5G signal now, but the world's largest semiconductor chip foundry thinks you will soon. Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company makes chips designed by companies like Apple and Huawei and expects such strong 5G smartphone usage next year that it's raised this year's capital expenditures to about $15 billion. That's 40% more than it previously earmarked, and it projects its CapEx to come in at that level next year as well. Former NBA star Meta World Peace hopes a new app he's launching will be a slam dunk for basketball fans looking for nearby pickup games. World Peace is an angel investor in several startups, and he's founded X vs. X, which aims to connect both professional and recreational athletes looking to join a nearby game of hoops. For $5 a month, X vs. X users get unlimited access to competitive pickup basketball games at indoor courts in their community. Wall Street Journal publisher News Corp has been added to Facebook's upcoming news section. The arrangement will allow headlines from its Dow Jones-owned publications, such as The Journal, The New York Post, Barron's, and MarketWatch, to appear in the feed. Facebook has sought to include news from about 200 different publications in the section. Some headlines will be curated by a team of editors, while others will be selected by the company's algorithm. But the feed will not include any advertising. Tech companies that deal directly with consumers are in line for a new web tax that's being considered by more than 100 countries. So how will consumers be impacted? Let's bring in Wall Street Journal tax reporter Richard Rubin to explain. So Richard, what has brought about the need for this web tax?
I think what we've seen really is countries really seeing profits being made in their countries, that their consumers, their market are what's driving, you know, say Google's ability to sell ads or Facebook's ability to sell ads is because they have these large customer bases, user bases, however you want to think of it, in every country around the world. And so that, as they see that, they're thinking as taxing authorities, well, we should get a piece of that because it's our market, our customers, our citizens who are contributing to these companies' profits. And so as these companies have grown larger and more important over the past decade, and as those companies have found increasingly clever and effective ways to reduce their tax burdens by reporting profits in low-tax countries, what we're seeing now is these market countries, France, Italy, the UK, starting to push back.
What's been the tech company's response to this?
Like any company, tech companies don't want to pay more than they have to. They don't want to pay more than they have been paying, but they're seeing the potential risk of multiple of overlapping taxes in multiple countries. And so they've been urging along the process in part because they're looking for some sort of rational framework so that country A and country B and country C and country D each don't go out and do their own taxes, that there's sort of a unified, coordinated system. And particularly for companies, one of the concerns is dispute resolution, which means that if the Netherlands says, no, we're taxing that 100 million, and Germany says, no, we're taxing it, that there's some mechanism to be determined, but some mechanism where the company can work with those countries and get some kind of resolution about where they should be paying. So they're not paying twice, and then from the country's perspective, that they are paying at least once.
Why is the U.S. against this tax?
Well, the U.S. is against these sort of unilateral tax proposals that have come from France and Australia and Italy. The U.S.'s concern really is that the U.S. is home to a lot of these companies, to Facebook, to Google, to Apple, to Amazon. And so in some sense, the U.S. is acting on behalf of those companies to say, wait a minute, our profits made by U.S. companies shouldn't get double or triple taxed in all these other places. Let's see if we can come up with a global multilateral agreement on exactly how the pie should be divided.
And so this doesn't have to do with companies who might have offices in other countries. It has to do with where their headquarters are?
It can have to do with where offices are, but a lot of times it's where companies pay tax where their headquarters are and where their intellectual property is, but not necessarily where their customers are. And so it's really about trying to align corporate taxation with the location of customers, not entirely, but certainly more than it has been.
And so our listeners are hearing this and saying, okay, a tax on these tech companies, and it's going to be a tax on consumer-facing companies. How would potentially consumers be impacted by this?
You might see, you know, some effect on pricing from these companies if they have additional costs. I think a lot of it may well end up being just shifting which country they're paying as opposed to having them pay a lot more. So the effect on the ordinary user, the consumer here, is probably pretty minimal, certainly in the near term. The effects are much larger in terms of where government revenue is collected and which companies are paying it.
And there's an uphill battle here, and that is involving achieving a consensus among nations on this.
Yeah, the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, which is leading this process, has 134 or so jurisdictions working on this, and they're supposed to reach consensus. Now, that doesn't mean that two tiny countries can say no, and then the whole thing doesn't happen. But it means that if there's some substantial disagreement, that any agreement won't proceed. So what we'll look out for in the coming months is really a few groups of countries. One is countries that have a lot of companies with intellectual property in them that have attracted those kinds of businesses by being low-tax jurisdictions, Ireland, Switzerland, the Netherlands. If they're going to be losing money, they may not like this proposal. The effect on countries like Norway and Sweden and Denmark that may have companies based there but not necessarily large markets, they may see some revenue loss. We don't know yet. And there are probably some concerns in the developing world too. And so as we see that mix of things, you could see the potential for a coalition against this agreement to emerge, even if there's agreement among the U.S., the U.K., and other large nations.
Is there any sort of a timeline as to when we can expect an up or down vote, or when we'll have a good idea whether a coalition can be built or not?
So they're trying to have a political agreement, a political consensus by the middle of 2020, and then move to the implementation phase. So right now they've got a framework out. They're soliciting public feedback. They're trying to refine some of the numbers and give countries a better sense of how they might be affected, and then try and cut this big, broad international deal over the next 6 to 8 months.
All right. That's Wall Street Journal tax reporter Richard Rubin on the line with us from Washington. Richard, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And that's your tech news briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen in New York for The Wall Street Journal.